Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth podcast. My mama told me you better shop around. Edition, as Dave Lapham joins me to take a look at the free agents who have agreed to new deals in Cincinnati, some guys they are still negotiating with, and we'll answer your Ask Lap questions. Then after that, it's a tribute to A.J. Green, who is moving on to Arizona after a memorable decade in Cincinnati. The Bengals Booth podcast is presented by Bud Light Seltzer. Refresh the game. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since Team Hoyt. I've been incredibly lucky to see some of the greatest athletes of my lifetime perform in person. I've seen Michael Jordan and LeBron James dunk. I've seen Tiger Woods and Ken Griffey Jr. swing. I've seen Tom Brady throw and A.J. Green catch. But the most inspirational athlete I have ever seen is Dick Hoyt, who passed away this week at the age of 80. Dick inspired millions of people over a span of more than 30 years by pushing his son Rick in a wheelchair in 32 Boston marathons and more than 1,000 other races all over the world. I lived in Boston for several years, and my wife Peg is an 8-time finisher of the marathon, so I've been a spectator many times. Seeing Team Hoyt reach the finish line moved me to tears every time. If you're not familiar with their story, look up Dick and Rick Hoyt on YouTube. I suspect that you'll be moved to tears as well. Now, let's get to football as Dave Lapham joins me to discuss free agency and much more.
All right, Lap, let's dive right into free agency so far for the Bengals. And who knows, as we're doing this recording, they might sign another guy or two. I'll keep an eye on that during the recording. But let's start with the biggest free agent acquisition thus far, and that is defensive end Trey Hendrickson from the Saints. 4 years, $60 million. Basically, it's kind of a swap. They lost Carl Lawson, their best pass rusher. They're bringing in a guy who had 13.5 sacks last year to tie for second best in the NFL.
Yeah, I thought that free agency had some depth to it, Dan, with the edge rushers, and it has some solid depth at defensive tackle. And the Bengals got one of each. You know, Ogunjobi, we know a lot about. He's raised some heck here against the Cincinnati Bengals. And like you said, Hendrickson had a breakout year, 13.5 sacks. The Lawson-Henderson trade-off to me is an interesting one. I think they're both rated maybe in the top three edge guys by most, most people that were rating edge people in the free agency. They have different, they're a little bit different though. I think Hendrickson, if I had to use the term football player, instincts, you know, an instinctive football player, I'd give the edge to Hendrickson because he plays the run a little bit better, obviously a lot better in my opinion than Carl does. I think Carl is improving, but if you're talking quick twitch, rare explosion, unbelievable first step get off, all the he's got that skill, that part of the skill set Lawson has is very, very unique, you know. And you look at Carl Lawson, put his numbers up, basically a one-man band with Hubbard being hurt a good part of it, not any compliment guys, you know. People are going to argue Hendrickson 13.5 sacks, but man, you got Cam Jordan, working with him. You got other guys inside with the offense the Saints have. They're playing with the lead all the time. And rushing the quarterback becomes much easier when you know you're going to rush the passer because they have to throw the football and try to catch up. Teams start abandoning their running game. I mean, you can come up with all kinds of theories and arguments and reasons. Bottom line, in my opinion, having, played in the trenches, 13.5 sacks is 13.5 sacks. He still went out and got them, He still did it. And I'm not saying that it wasn't maybe an easier path. I mean, Carl had fewer sacks, but more hits, but a lot more snaps. Well, Hendrickson has a good rush and the quarterback has nowhere else to go because other guys are getting a good rush. Carl Lawson has a good rush. Quarterback can slide, step, and move and change the pocket because it's a one-man band on the rush. So, there's something to it all the time. When you look at a guy's numbers, that's why football, I think, is the most interesting sport, because there's 11 moving parts on both sides of the football. And, you know, one guy's numbers, you can't just extrapolate it. It's not like a vacuum. Extrapolate it and plug it in here and he's going to have those same numbers. It just doesn't work that way. You know, there's a lot of variables and a lot of components around everybody's numbers and everybody's efforts and all that goes into it. But bottom line is, when I watch him play, I mean, I'm excited to see the H-men, Hubbard and Hendrickson. They both have this big energy. I mean, they're both going to bring it every snap. They're both going to be, you know, a full effort, going to empty the effort bucket. I'm very interested in seeing the H-men on the edges. I think Hubbard is going to be a good little tandem.
We will not use preparation H when talking about those two guys coming off the edge as a term, that is. We're not going to use that. Here's what I like about it. A couple of things. Number one, you get an extra year. So Carl's deal with the Jets was 3 years. Yep. The Bengals deal with Hendrickson was 4 years, $15 million a year in each case. So I like the extra year. Secondly, would be the durability. Hendrickson did have one season where he only played 5 games. But Carl, of course, has a couple of significant knee injuries in his past. You know, there were times that he had to miss several games here, several games there for pulled muscles and things like that. I think you're getting a slightly more durable guy, at least based on his history.
I agree with that, Dan. And a bigger guy, you know, overall frame, you know, 270 pounds that carries it a lot more easily than Carl Lawson, who's a beefed up, whatever he is. And he's not 270 pounds. And, you know, the in my mind with Carl, the only negative, I guess, from a physical standpoint is lack of length. And Hendrickson is got more length, you know, that way. And again, I think an overall football player, in terms of football player instincts, I definitely give the edge to Hendrickson. And I do like you said, I do like the fact that you have the extra year. They're both ascending players. It's going to be very interesting to see, you know, whose ascension continues. I do think both have upside potential. The Jets will probably say, oh, I think Carl Lawson has more upside potential because of that, the rare explosiveness, that quick twitch that he has. I mean, you don't find many big guys with the quick twitch that dude has.
Trey Hendrickson ran a 4.65 40, you know, out of college. So he's a guy that might not have the quickness and explosion as Carl Lawson, but he is also a tremendous all-around athlete.
Effort guy too. And I'm not saying that Carl Lawson isn't or wasn't. Carl Lawson, I think, you know, gives you good effort, but we know what Sam Hubbard's like. I mean, Sam Hubbard's, you know, it's like if he's losing an arm, he's still coming, you know, and that's what Hendrickson brings to the table as well, I think.
All right, let's talk about the two cornerbacks that have signed so far, beginning with, and I'm going to, I work very hard on this name, on the pronunciation. I think I've got it right. Chidobe Awuzie. Chidobe Awuzie. Second round draft pick by the Cowboys back in 2017. He'll be 27 years old in June. He gets a 3-year, roughly $21 million contract. So that's about $7 million a year. Will Jackson signed with Washington for twice that, $14 million a year. Will Jackson is not twice as good as Chidobe Awuzie. In fact, based on conversations that I've had with people from Dallas, the description of Chidobe Awuzie sounds exactly like Will Jackson to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of comparisons. To me, he looks like he's a reliable guy, where he's supposed to be kind of guy, can make plays. Now, last year he missed 8 games. He had the hamstring injury and COVID issues, but his overall production the first 4 years in the league. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think they're losing much and they're not paying anywhere near as much. So I don't have a real big problem with that signing, and he'll start. You know, to me, the Bengals went out in free agency and they got a starting edge rusher, they got a starting corner, they got a starting slot corner, and they got a starting defensive tackle, a 3-technique. I mean, they've addressed a lot of defensive needs. And again, I feel like in free agency, there was more depth on the defensive side of the football. I think the offensive line depth in free agency was not as deep. I think there were some good players, and they got paid. The O-line, the guys that were out there broke the bank. But I think the offensive line in the draft is a lot deeper than the defensive front and the secondary draft. So I think the Bengals went and said, all right, well, free agency, edge, defensive tackle, corner. We'll see if we can there, and then we'll address and still try to get that old lineman, Riley Reiff, and hopefully he's signing as we speak. Hopefully Joe Burrow's taken him to breakfast, lunch, and dinner and told him how important it is that he comes up here to be a Cincinnati Bengal. And if they get that done, then a little bit of the pressure's off, I think, in terms of the draft. And I know people are going to be like, look, you know, you're going to play you're saying, all right, well, the draft, you're going to have two rookies starting in your offensive line. No, that's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying I think the draft is deeper than what they had out there in free agency. And I think it was like in this free agency that was supposed to be terrible year to be a free agent because $15 million less than the cap and a lot of teams in cap jail and can't bid. Trent Williams got the highest offensive tackle contract in the history of the National Football League. Dooney got 80 million, 130 plus. Dooney got 80 million plus. So the peak guys, the prime guys, were going to get paid. And the Chiefs only need is offensive line. They addressed it with a bell cow. You know, the 49ers, they got Trent Williams in a trade. They like Trent Williams. They have a need there. They didn't do anything else. Neither of those teams did anything else. What the Bengals decided to do was not pay that kind of money for that type of a player. Instead, you know, try to address multiple needs. The Bengals have many more needs than the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers. That's just the truth. That's just the nature of the beast.
Let's turn to the next defensive back that they signed. Slot corner, Mike Hilton. We know all about him from seeing the Bengals face the Steelers over the past several years. He's 27 years old. He gets a four-year, $24 million deal. So that projects to $6 million per. So basically, Awuzie gets $7 million a year. Hilton gets $6 million a year. Added up, $13 million. That's still less than Will Jackson.
You got two for. You got two for one, you know, in terms of the dollars there. And
for multiple years, and they're both 2 years younger than Will.
Right. Hilton's 20, Awuzie is 25 and Hilton's 27, right?
No. Awuzie turns 27 in June. So he'll be 27 in time for next season. And Hilton is 27. Will be 29 next year.
So Hilton, seven interceptions, 9.5 sacks, and, you know, 41 pressures off the edge. So, I mean, now you have an element that caused the Bengals and other teams problems. When Hilton comes, he brings it. I mean, he's matched up on running backs and people like that, and that's a mismatch in Hilton's favor, in the Steelers' opinion, and probably Lou Anarumo's opinion as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how they utilize him. You know, it's very interesting, though, Dan. You know, the thing is, you almost have two free agent classes, honestly, because DJ Reader made a guest appearance. Trey Waynes didn't make any appearance. So you've got basically this year, you've got Trey Waynes, who they got paid a ton of money to play corner in last year's free agency market. I mean, they have basically a new secondary, three new starters out there, you know, in the secondary. And Ogunjobi has a three technique. Hendrickson is a defensive end. They have addressed that defensive football team in the last two free agency classes, where they felt like there's a deeper pool of defensive players to look at to get better than offensive linemen.
Well, let's turn to Larry Ogunjobi, because that's another guy we've seen a lot of over the past several years with the Cleveland Browns, also a member of the 2017 draft class. So that was the case with Hendrickson and Awuzie. Hilton was part of the 2016 draft class. But in any case, Larry Ogunjobi turns 27 in June. 5.5 sacks as an interior defensive lineman in 2018 and 2019. Story on him is that apparently he's a little bit inconsistent, but he always played well against the Bengals.
He did. I mean, in 8 games, he had 1.5 sacks, 6 tackles for loss, 4 quarterback hits. He was the thorn in their side. And they moved him. Cleveland ended up, moving him from a three technique to a nose tackle. I thought that they did people a favor. I thought he was better as a three technique. And I think, outside shoulder guard pass rush guy. And I think that's where the Bengals, are looking to utilize him. They felt like, honestly, they were second fewest quarterback sacks in the National Football League. Obviously, that's a huge weakness. Where the Bengals had problems last year was in the trenches, offensive and defensive line. So they've addressed the defensive line in free agency, and everybody out there is going to go nuts if they don't get re-signed, that they didn't do anything with the offensive line. But they will address it in the draft, and they'll still address for depth, defensive depth in the draft. But I think in the early rounds, it's going to be offensive oriented. There's no two ways about it, no question about it. But I think Ogunjobi is a solid signing. I think maybe Geno Atkins' days are numbered. I mean, you can't spend $40 million in defensive tackle with, DJ Reader, Ogunjobi, Geno Atkins, Daniels. Somebody's got to go. And obviously, I think Geno might be the guy to go unless he takes an enormous haircut.
All right. Now let's turn to some guys that the Bengals are reportedly talking to, including a player that you've mentioned a few times already today, Riley Reiff, veteran offensive lineman, former first-round draft pick by the Lions. Spent 5 years in Detroit and then the last four in Minnesota, 32 years old. Pro Football Focus calls him one of the most consistent offensive tackles in the league. So this obviously would be a significant addition in the attempt to improve the offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things I like about him. Obviously, he's on the back nine of his career. He's played a few years. They do need that veteran presence. There's always a need for a veteran presence in the offensive line. And he would provide that. And for years, linebackers coming out of Penn State, it was Penn State U. He comes out of Iowa. In my mind, that's O-line U. Kirk Ferentz was an offensive line coach in the NFL with the Cleveland Browns and Baltimore Ravens. He knows his offensive linemen. He recruits offensive linemen out of high school with great talent to develop at Iowa. They come out of Iowa, I think, ready to play. Scherf is another example of an Iowa guy that was out there in free agency, and he got tagged by the Redskins. So there's we can go over a litany of guys that have had success from Iowa in terms of the offensive line. Like you said, Dan, he was the 23rd pick in the draft in the first round coming out of college. So over 1,000 snaps last year, only had one penalty, committed one penalty, and gave up one sack. I think he's very intelligent. I think he's extremely durable. I mean, he's dependable. He shows up. He's accountable, reliability, dependability because of the physical aspect of it with the mental intelligence. And he's versatile. He's got position versatility. He can play left tackle. He can play right tackle. So I think he would be a great signing. He's kind of what you're looking for. And he was a salary cap casualty. The Vikings saved between $11 and $12 million, I think it was, by letting him go. And I think his people probably feel like after Trent Williams, he might be the guy. But it hasn't worked out that way, I guess, maybe necessarily. And the Bengals have him in town, and they're whining and dining him and trying to get a deal done. It'd be great if they could get a deal done with him. And then I think there'd be a transposition of Riley Reiff comes, and at that point, Bobby Hart would probably go. They wouldn't be keeping them, both of them, out there.
In the early stages of free agency, when we were talking about possibilities, obviously, Trent Williams was at the top of the totem pole. He's getting $23 million a year from the 49ers. That wasn't going to happen. Taylor Moten's name came up. He got tagged by the Panthers. Darrell Williams' name came up. He got a three-year extension with his team, the Buffalo Bills. So that really thinned the available tackle market out pretty quickly. We mentioned Matt Filer, who signed with the Chargers for 3 years, $21 million. From what's still left out there as we speak, Riley Reiff, Mitchell Schwartz, who got cut by the Chiefs, Russell Okung, Alejandro Villanueva, what appeals to you most from that pack? Is it Riley Reiff?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've got a good solid guy there. I don't think the Minnesota Vikings would have necessarily, let him go if it wasn't just salary cap issues. They're in a little bit of cap jail and had to make a decision, had to make a move. I like him a lot. I mean, I think he's a really good player. I do think that the offensive line depth got thinned out very quickly. I didn't think it was that deep as we talked about in free agency with the offensive line, and it got plucked. If you have a good one, normally you don't let them, you know, out there unless you have situations with cap problems and things of that nature and guys on the back nine. Because everybody, a lot of the guys we're talking about, they have some wear and tear on them. There's no question. I mean, I think Trent Williams, I think, will probably be upper crust guy for a couple more years, maybe three. And the 49ers are like, look, we have, this is our need, period. And free agency, this is what we're going to spend on. So he got the enormous bucks. The one thing that we've talked about this a lot, Dan, is, okay, you go get the weapons or do you get linemen? Well, in this down market, the two guys that got paid were a left tackle and a guard. They hit the jackpot because there weren't many of them, and the teams that had a need for them were willing to pay significant dollars. I mean, their contracts didn't diminish like people thought they might. It might be a bad year. It's going to be a bad year for quite a few free agents, but the cream of the crop free agents, not a bad year for. And who are the two highest paid? Offensive linemen. Who else getting money? Edge rush guy. Cornerbacks. It's a passing league. Got to protect them. Got to be able to rush them and cover them.
And yet, the wide receivers, by and large, are not getting paid. And that leads us to Kenny Golladay, who has a one-year offer on the table from Cincinnati, reportedly the number one free agent wide receiver in this class, according to most of the experts, had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons for Detroit 2018 and 2019 before getting hurt last year. Career yards per catch average of nearly 17 yards a catch. He wants to get paid like the top receivers in the NFL, you know, close to $20 million a year. That's not happening for any of these guys with the cap going down. So the Bengals have offered him a one-year deal, basically saying, hey, come here, put up big numbers with Joe Burrow throwing you the ball, and then next year you can cash in either here or somewhere else when the cap goes back up. The Giants are bringing him in for a visit, so maybe that's the way it turns out. But the Bengals have at least put their chips on the table with the best free agent wide receiver out there.
I think that it's a bad year to be a free agent wide receiver from a market standpoint. Kenny Golladay is a great player. There's no question about it. And teams around the league are saying, okay, why don't you just do a one-year bet on yourself deal? And then put up some great numbers, and next year will be a better year to be a free agent. There may be fewer free agents at wide receiver out there on the market. The market could be more rich. It was a $15 million decrease this year because of coronavirus. So there's a lot of extenuating circumstances. It's a supply and demand scenario. There's more supply, so the demand goes down. Everybody's waiting for the wide receivers. They're all looking for paydays. Everybody can't get a payday. So teams are saying, when are you going to get more reasonable? Who's going to get more reasonable? The Bengals are part of that mix. We'll see if they can land a guy like Golladay or if he ends up going to the Big Apple.
All right. We have discussed the guys that the Bengals have signed. We've discussed a couple of guys that they are still talking to, and there are obviously others that they are talking to that have not become public, but it's time to turn to a listener. We've got a bunch of Ask Lap questions that were submitted via Twitter, and let's start with Ryan. Here's Ryan's question, Lap. Why have the Bengals ignored their most glaring need of offensive line so far? Shouldn't Burrow be the top priority and worth spending on the top lineman available? Related question from Daniel, is there a plan to protect the franchise quarterback? So this is obviously the number one topic, I think, for most Bengals fans. Why haven't they made a step yet to fix the offensive line?
Yeah, I think that they decided that the amount of spend all your cap on one guy, or, you know, maybe have room for maybe one more player They feel like addressing the defense with three potential starters or more, and that they can, if they do end up getting a deal done with Riley Reiff, and I do think that there's pressure on them to get a deal done with Riley Reiff. If they get that deal done, I think it eases the pressure tremendously. But, you know, the old philosophy of, do you want just one stellar offensive lineman and you can't really afford to have, you know, four others? Or would you rather have five good ones across the board? You know, that's part of, I guess, the philosophy. Bottom line is, it's going to have to be addressed. And if they didn't get it done in free agency, if they don't get Riley Reiff, they don't get any offensive lineman signed in free agency, where it is not incredibly deep. There was some talent, but again, it takes two to tango. You know, there's multiple reasons why guys sign with teams, and money is number one. But then if you're going to get the money from somebody, another suitor that is the playoff team, and you're not, I think the carrot of Joe Burrow is a significant one. I think that's a factor. In if I'm an offensive lineman, a free agent offensive lineman, I'm looking to see who my quarterback might be. So I think Joe Burrow is a definite plus. But, you know, teams that got the big value free agents, 49ers, Kansas City Chiefs, enough said.
Similar question from JT. Why do the Bengals refuse to value guards the way the rest of the successful teams do? Why not build a superior line instead of going the cheap route?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what they do end up with at the guard position. And, you know, everybody was so sold, and me included. I mean, Thune's a great player. There's no question about it. Trent Williams is a great player. Penei Sewell is a great player. And you start hearing about these guys, and if you don't get that guy, there's bitter disappointment. And there's only one team that's going to get the guy. Am I saying that I, as a former lineman, do I want the Bengals offensive line to be improved upon and to get better with Frank Pollock, give him some tools, give him some clay that he can mold into a solid offensive line? Hell yeah. And I've said before, our best offensive line in franchise history was in the 80s. We had good lines in that decade. Who were the kingpins? The Mexican Connection, Pro Bowl left tackle, perennial, Anthony Munoz, Pro Bowl guard, Max Montoya. Yeah, I mean, there's no question that the best teams in Bengals history had the best offensive lines in Bengals history operating with them, with those two guys. So it goes hand in hand. Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind. The Bengals offensive line has to improve. And maybe the first step is underway as we're speaking here, if they can get something done with Riley Reiff and then go and address things in the draft.
I want to go back to the beginning of JT's question. Why do the Bengals refuse to value guards the way the rest of the successful teams do? The Patriots have been pretty successful. They had Joe Thuney. They elected not to re-sign him for those kinds of numbers. I think that the Bengals are actually in the norm where valuing guards is concerned. I think their feeling is, and this has been proven out over history, you got to spend on tackles and you draft and develop guards. And I think that that's probably the norm. Now, there are some exceptions. I think the Chiefs showed recently they cut their tackles and they spent, you know, big on a guard. The Saints have historically spent big on guards. But I think by and large, the Bengals are probably in the norm, at least in terms of how they budget for their offensive line, in thinking we've got to pay tackles at the top of the pay scale. But if you do that with guards, overall, it's going to hurt your team.
Yeah, bottom line is when push came to shove and the New England Patriots said, okay, well, we've got money spent at XYZ position, and one of them includes a guard. The guard's always going to lose. That position's always going to be the first one to go, no matter how great the guy is. And it is puzzling that the Kansas City Chiefs, who were exposed and abused on the edge in the Super Bowl with their two tackles injured, and they got rid of both of them, and they were injured, and then they let them go for cap dollars and everything else. It it is interesting for them to go the route that they've gone. I guess it's going to be interesting to see how the final solution of that whole thing. You know, Pittsburgh with DeCastro has spent some money at guard. Cleveland has spent some money at guard. These are Pro Bowl caliber linemen, though. You know, and once you develop a guy, he becomes a Pro Bowl caliber guy like Tooney is, you know, they're going to get paid. But then when you have cap problems, they're going to be the first ones to go. So it is. It's an interesting dichotomy that goes on at that position. There's no doubt about it.
Question from Steve O. Could Bobby Hart be a decent guard?
See, I believe that if you can play tackle, most probably you can play guard. But the one thing that Bobby has had difficulty with is bull rush. And at guard, you're going to get your butt bull rushed. So, if you can't sink your hips and handle the bull rush out there on the edge, it's going to be harder to sink your hips and handle the bull rush inside. So that would be, I guess, my only concern there. Does he have enough ballast and, lower body strength and all those kind of things to transition to the guard position? It is interesting. I've seen, in my mind, having played all five of the positions, I felt like, boy, if you can play tackle, you could play guard. But there's, Willie Anderson. I remember talking to Willie. Willie's like, man, I didn't like guard. You know, it's like there's the traffic in there, it's so much faster. It is almost like rush hour. You know, you're in rush hour and it's rush hour on the interstate, because it's not only traffic, it's fast traffic. There's stuff twisting and turning and spinning, going crazy inside. And it's a quicker reaction time. Some guys don't like the environment inside if they've been out on the edge their whole career. So there's, it's never a given. But it would be interesting to see how Bobby would transition to a guard.
If the Bengals wind up signing Riley Reiff or another of the tackles that's still out there, and Penei Sewell is available with a fifth pick in the draft, and they take him, who plays where?
That's a good problem to have. Your five best linemen hit the field, you know? As of right now, without the draft, if they can get Riley Reiff, obviously you'd still have Jonah Williams out there at left tackle and then Riley Reiff at right tackle. And then you'd have, in my mind, a guy not to give up on, Adeniji, as a swing tackle. I think Adeniji is a good football player. And I think he showed promise. And I think he'll develop even further with Frank Pollock. I think that Frank's going to teach him some techniques. I think that'll be very useful in his development. So it's going to be interesting to see who ends up shifting where. I've said a couple of times now, in my mind, I think Jonah Williams might be a good center. Now, I don't think they're going to do that with Trey Hopkins, the level that he plays the center position, but he's coming back from the ACL, but he'll be back. And I think he'll be as good as he's ever been. I'm not sure about the very start of the season though. So the thing you want is seven or eight starters is what you want. And you want versatility. You want you got your starting five, but you want at least another couple of guys to play multiple positions. And also you want at least two of your starting offensive linemen to be able to play multiple positions. You don't want to have to make two or three moves because of one injury. So that would be the ideal scenario for any NFL team.
So if they sign Riley Reiff and draft Penei Sewell, or we'll even say Rashawn Slater, so you've got Jonah Williams, Riley Reiff, and Penei Sewell, which guy would be most likely to move to guard, maybe if it's only in the short term?
Maybe Penei Sewell. That's what they did with Andrew Whitworth. Whitworth, worked at guard to, acclimate himself to the National Football League. Because Dan, as great as Sewell is from a physical standpoint, looking at him, it's like if you put requirements and specifications into a computer, Penei Sewell would come spitting out of there. But he didn't play last year. He sat out last year because of coronavirus. So he's got a small sample size, and it's not against the SEC. If he was handling 10 to 12 rushes that the SEC provides on an annual basis, I'd feel better. But the Pac-12, I mean, I'm not saying that he can't do it, but he hasn't shown that he can do it. So to me, there's no total guarantee, no total given there. So it'd be up to Frank to decide that, obviously, but it might be easier for Penei Sewell to transition inside, working his way inside outside, but that would be decided by the practices, the pass rush drills, preseason games, how many there are, and all that that goes along with it.
Question from Nathan. Do you think the Buffalo Bills approach to the offensive line would be the best way to go now by bringing in several options in both free agency and the draft and then letting them battle it out?
Yeah, that's the ideal world. I mean, if you the thing that you don't want to do, though, you don't want to sign a free agent lineman just to sign one, because the pressure to sign one is so immense that you sign a guy just to sign a guy, and then you have to draft still. You know, it's like my whole thing is, if you can double down, and you're doubling down because you think you've got two viable candidates and may the best man win, that's doubling down. Doubling down is not like, I'll sign this guy because damn, I better sign somebody. And then, geez, if I really upgraded, I'm still going to have to draft. That's not really doubling down. Doubling down is accumulating as much talent as you possibly can, with as much, you know, resources as you possibly can, and letting the best man win. That's a true double down. And I hope the Bengals do it with offensive linemen for sure.
All right, we've got some AJ Green questions following the news that AJ is signing with the Arizona Cardinals from our friends at Bengals UK. You played with Isaac Curtis, you played with Charlie Joyner, you've seen Chad Johnson, Eddie Brown, TJ Hushmanzada, etc. Where does AJ Green rank?
Well, he's right up there. You know, he's I think if Isaac Curtis had played in today's football, I think he would have put up stupid numbers. I mean, Isaac was world-class speed with as good a hands, a good a pair of hands as I've ever seen. He just, being on the field with him and watching him do the things that he did is like, oh my God. I don't know if I'd ever can say that there may be another guy that could do what Isaac Curtis could do. He was mesmerizing. But AJ Green is right there. I mean, he's very, very close. And the thing that they both have in common from a personality standpoint, very, very similar, just unbelievable human beings, you know, for as elite a player as they are, they're an elite person that way, in every way you can be, a son, a husband, a father, a friend, you know, a citizen. I mean, they're just unbelievable people. So the fact that they gave you, and Charlie Joyner falls in that category as from a human being standpoint, but he's he didn't have the gifted skill set that AJ and Isaac Curtis do. I mean, they're like world-class elite athletes, and Charlie Joyner got the utmost out of what his physical abilities were, and he had some, but not to the level that those guys did. But all three of those guys, you as a coach, you never had to worry about them causing any kind of problem whatsoever. Forget a week-to-week basis or even day-to-day, hour-to-hour basis. I mean, those guys were just unbelievable character, as well as incredible football players. So yeah, AJ Green is somebody that, man, what a mark, what a legacy he's left in this franchise, for his on the field, off the field, just total person that AJ Green is.
And that leads to this question from Jacob. Do you think AJ had the most influence on Bengals fandom in the past 25 years? I would actually say Chad Johnson had more impact on fans, just because, you know, he moved the needle with everybody. You didn't even have to be a football fan to be interested in what Chad was up to. But what do you think about that question? Did he have the most influence on the fans over the past 25 years?
I think that he didn't care about that, and he had no intention of it. Whereas Chad, social media, you know, craving spotlight. That's what he wanted. Chad wanted to be a social media maven, and he was. I mean, you're right, Dan. I mean, Chad is an influencer, you know, in a social media platform. AJ could give a hill of beans about that. He had no interest in it. So from that standpoint, they're at North and South Pole. But, you know, from a true football fan, the fanatic part of it, AJ had as much influence, I think, as anybody. But as far as periphery fans or people, I mean, Chad had an influence and does still on people that aren't necessarily all that interested in football.
Correct. I would agree with that part. All right. Whenever we shine the lap signal into the nighttime sky and ask lap questions, we get a few that are a little bit off the wall. Here goes. This is from My Bengals Thoughts. Do you have any stories from when you played for Donald Trump? I know the answer to that question. You've got a ton of stories from when you played for Donald Trump in the USFL. Why don't I tee you up just to describe what it was like to walk in for that first contract meeting at Trump Tower?
Yeah, that was he was impressive, to say the least. You know, the Trump Tower had just been completed, and he had his penthouse offices up there on that top floor, and up you go, you know, you're in front of him and his desk, and there's a little depression. You go down a step into a seat, and he's elevated, and behind him is a portrait of himself, and it's like, oh, I'm not in Kansas anymore. I'm in the land of Oz. That's where we are right now. But yeah, he was a very, very shrewd businessman, very fair though. And I remember saying, gee, this offer is pretty nice. I mean, if we could guarantee the first 2 years, done, son. I'm like, oh man, I wish I asked for more than 2 year guarantee. He was a no nonsense guy. You know, there was no like, let me think about it and come back tomorrow. He either were like, I'm all for that, forget that. I mean, it was like, he was very, very to the point. And he just, I think real successful people can make decisions like that, you know? And, you know, when you look around his office and see all the projects that he had going, and that this football thing was just almost like a fun thing for him compared to the other things that he was doing. But he was a very competitive guy. He loved owning the football team. There's no question about it. He was a great owner. And he whatever the coaches really wanted or needed, he would try to get that done. He was definitely somebody that was very, very interested in being an owner in the National Football League. There's no question about that.
All right. Our final Ask Lap question comes from Jim. What's the most fun you've ever had on a family vacation? And do you have any recommendations?
Our family vacation is the same thing every year. We're beach people. We go to the beach, and Hilton Head has been the destination for quite a few years now in the summertime, where the entire family goes. But we, you know, we've been to Florida and other places, but Hilton Head is easier to get to, and we really, really enjoy Hilton Head. So yeah, we're beach bums. Love everything about the beach, you know, and Hilton Head offers all kinds of things on top of just, you know, going to the beach 24/7, that's for sure. So I recommend it highly, highly recommend Hilton Head.
All right, buddy, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the podcast. I'm sure there will be more news to talk about in the very near future. I've been keeping an eye on my phone just in case any new signings happen during our conversation. They didn't. But I look forward to more breaking news in the days to come.
Well, I hope R-squared Riley Reiff, I hope they get him. they get him signed. It'd be nice that he'd be out there, Dan. And it was a pleasure as always. Great catching up with you on the podcast, sir.
The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Bud Light Seltzer. It's light and refreshing with a hint of fruit flavor. After a memorable decade in Cincinnati that included Pro Bowl trips in each of his first 7 seasons, A.J. Green is headed to the Arizona Cardinals, signing a 1-year contract for $6 million guaranteed, with incentives that could push that salary to $8.5 million. We heard Dave Lapham discuss where he ranks AJ among the Bengals' all-time great wide receivers, and I asked Mike Brown about AJ's place in Bengals history a few years ago.
If I had a starting all-time Bengals team, he'd be on it. He brings a different package. He's fast, but not as fast as Isaac. He's quick, but not as quick as Chad. He has a tremendous catching radius and a very competitive spirit. You feel really secure with him on one side. They have to overplay him. They know if they don't, they're in trouble. And yes, you're right when you say we've had a number of top wideouts over the years. I think probably that is a position where we've had more than our share of great players.
It has truly been my privilege to be behind the mic for all 65 of AJ's touchdown catches in a Bengals uniform. And I punctuated many of those calls by saying his full name. In case you've never heard the story behind that, I was hired to be the Bengals radio broadcaster in May of 2011, when I was still the radio TV voice of the Pawtucket Red Sox. Since it was just a month into the baseball season, I didn't want to leave the Paw Sox high and dry, so I stayed with the team until the beginning of September, meaning I wasn't able to attend Bengals training camp. That was AJ's rookie year, and the first time I ever met him was before getting on a team bus prior to the first preseason game. I figured I would introduce myself, and while making small talk, I asked him what AJ stood for. When he answered, Adriel Jeremiah, I thought, what a cool name. It sounded majestic or biblical. And that's when I first thought it might be fun to use that after some of his biggest plays.
Now an I formation backfield on first and 10. Play action fake, roll to the right. Deep ball for a wide open AJ Green.
Baby.
Catches at the 18. It's a touchdown for Adriel Jeremiah Green. His eighth consecutive game with a touchdown catch on a beautiful 57-yard bomb from the Red Rifle. It's a play action fake. Dalton sets up to throw.
Come
he
on,
rings
AJ.
It deep for a wide open AJ Green. Catches in stride. Look
five,
at him go.
Five.
At the 20, the 10, the 5.
Woo.
Touchdown!
Yeah.
Bengals 81 yards to 18.
Yeah.
Adriel Jeremiah Green. Boyd out to the right. Here's a pass to AJ. Wiggles out of an ankle tackle and runs into the end zone for a Bengals touchdown. Great yak. Yards after catch. Produces a touchdown for Adriel Jeremiah Green. Dalton takes a shotgun snap against a five-man rush. He's going to fire
come on,
deep. AJ Green is open.
Come on, AJ.
He bobbles it.
Oh,
he's got it at the 20.
Come
great
on,
cut.
AJ.
Still running 10.
Yeah.
5.
Woo.
Touchdown.
Woo.
Adriel Jeremiah Green. 77 yards. The former juggler as a kid made a juggling catch and took it to the house to give the Bengals a 21-16 lead. On first and 10, Dalton fakes to Mixon
and
throws
AJ.
It high and deep. AJ
oh,
Green
baby.
Catches at the Buffalo 40, sprinting toward the middle of the field at the 15. 10, 5, touchdown!
Woo. Baby!
77 yards! Andy Dalton finding A.J. Green, who roasted the rookie cornerback, Tre'Davious White. Boyd goes in motion. Dalton back to throw. Steps up. Heaves it long. A.J. Green is wide
come on,
open.
AJ.
He's got it. Touchdown.
Yeah.
Bengals.
Yeah.
As Andy Dalton floated a high rainbow 54 yards downfield. A touchdown to A.J. Green.
No Revis Island there.
It is 3rd and 7 at the Pittsburgh 25. McCarron, 5 yards behind the line, takes a shotgun snap. It's a four-man rush. A.J.
Got
downfield
him.
For A.J.
Got
Green.
Yeah.
He catches it and goes into the end zone.
Yeah.
Touchdown, Bengals.
Yeah.
A 25-yard touchdown,
woo.
And the Bengals have a one-point lead. Dalton back to throw. We're down to 5 seconds left in the half. He's going to throw a high, deep Hail Mary pass into the end
come on,
zone.
AJ.
And it is bobbled and caught.
Yeah.
A.J.
Yeah,
Green
AJ.
Makes the catch
woo.
On the ricochet Hail Mary. A 49-yard touchdown pass as
baby.
A prayer is answered in the end zone by Adriel Jeremiah Green.
Last but not least, About 1 month into his NFL career, AJ joined me on the pregame show for a Fun Facts interview.
Time for Fantastic Fun Facts with Adriel, Jeremiah Green.
Yeah.
Anybody in your life that uses your real name?
Sometimes my parents, that's about it. Nobody else.
Did they used to drop it on you when you got in trouble?
Yeah, my mom did.
All right, you're a South Carolina kid. Tell us a little bit about where you're from.
I'm from this little country place called Ridgeville, South Carolina. Nothing out there, just a country area. And, went to Somerville High School, and that's where I played football. So.
Speaking of Somerville High School, your high school football coach is the winningest high school football coach ever,
yeah.
John McKissick. Still
yeah.
going strong at 85, is that right?
Yeah, 85. It's unbelievable. He's still active. He still coaches, so it's unbelievable.
What was he like?
He was real outgoing, always talking, trying to coach. He got ran over a couple of times on the sideline, so I don't know how he's still coaching, but he's a great guy.
I read somewhere that he's retired one number in his 59 years or 60 years of high school coaching.
Yeah.
It's yours.
Yeah.
That must mean a lot.
Yeah, definitely, man. It's coming from him. He sees a lot of great that came through that program, and I was just honored.
So, 10th grade high school, you verbally commit to Georgia.
Yeah.
What was it about the Bulldogs that enthralled you so?
It was just Coach Rick and, preaching to be a better man after the life of football. And I felt like I could go anywhere and play. But just give me that growing up and being a man and being on my own. And I felt like Coach Rick was the best man for that.
So after you did that, a bunch of big-time coaches from other schools kept coming around trying to get you to change your mind, right?
Yeah, definitely. But, I stayed firm and, I held it through.
Who was your childhood hero?
Got to be my parents. They always pushed hard work and, always said nothing is easy. You always have to work for it. Got to be my parents.
Did you have an athletic hero, somebody whose poster was on your bedroom wall, anything like that?
Probably Michael Jordan, because he always strived himself to be great, and that's what I'm trying to do.
All right, so you're the number 4 pick in this year's draft. Obviously, whoever that is well compensated.
Mm-hmm.
What's your splurge? What do you spend money on?
I'm not really a big spender, but I love clothes and shoes. That's my passion, even though I don't even get dressed that much. But, just the knowledge that I know that I have them is always good. So
a clothes horse, huh?
Yeah, clothes and shoes.
All right. I read it somewhere that you were on a juggling team as a kid.
Yeah.
What do they do on the juggling team?
You just juggle different items like balls, scarves, all kind of stuff like that. And we used to perform at halftime of basketball games, so kind of fun.
How many things could you get in the air?
Four. Four. And then after sixth grade, I was like, man, it's not cool no more, so I just quit.
AJ, is it like riding a bike? Could you still juggle if we had four objects here right now?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Gatorade did a little special on me with a little juggling stuff, so I still got it.
All right, it's radio, so I'm not going to ask you to, so you're off the hook for now anyway. Have you had any other jobs other than professional athlete?
Oh, yeah. I had one job at a store, like department store, like Stevie and Barry's, and I used to work at Zaxby's. But my coach made me quit both jobs because he said I had my whole life to work. So, I just focused on athletics.
Well, they sold shoes there, so you were able to indulge your habit probably for liking shoes, right?
Yeah, a little bit for like 2 weeks.
All right, what NFL star do you look forward to meeting?
Gotta be probably this seeing Peyton Manning. Just watching my whole life growing up, and just now I'm here like playing on the same field. Not playing on the same field, but in the NFL. But gotta be Peyton Manning.
When you have met big time people over the last year or two, are you a little bit awestruck, or are you over that?
No, I think I'm over that now. So.
All right, fair enough. When you're not at work, what do you enjoy doing?
Probably just sleeping and playing video games.
How late do you sleep when you can? I mean, if you've got the freedom to sleep, how late will you go?
Probably 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock,
No longer an option in the NFL?
Yeah, exactly. you're lacking me. You just need to get your rest when you can.
All right, you're off the hot seat. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Here's hoping for a spectacular next chapter in Arizona for AJ Green. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Seltzer. Refresh the game. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe, and if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.